Yamada apparently took it seriously. Yeah, good idea. No one messes with the Honor Warriors. Now I gotta get my Shogun reps up. Seiki stole a quick glance at Isuke's fiery katana, plus 77 attack, plus 1% energy regeneration. Effect, 5% chance that the target will burn for extra damage, and wondered what it looked like out of its scabbard. Since Isuke made no further mention about the encounter with the Rogami clan, Seiki did not think it was a good idea to ask. They walked across a small bridge and turned left down a small lane that ran along a clear little canal, lined with weeping willows on both sides. Seiki looked upstream and saw a fishing boat coming down. On the other side, one nameless woman was washing her clothes in the water. The two men seemed to know where they were heading, and soon they stopped in front of a sliding bamboo door in front of one of the houses along the canal. People were going in and out of it without respite. Isuke turned to look at Seiki.
"Thank you," he said. "I would have..."
Then he sighed, knowing that Seiki understood what he meant. He turned to Yamada.
"Thanks to you, too," he said, again with an amused expression. It was Yamura's nonsensical rambling that had diffused the situation.
"Don't thank me," said Yamura unhappily. "My hand was forced." Isuke chuckled.
"Lay low for a while and they will forget about you."
Then he disappeared into the house. Seiki was not sure how serious the man meant what he said. With the Ichikeya, everyone seemed to know that underneath the surface it was all play. These people were somehow a little different, especially Suguru, the man who had provoked Isuke earlier. Seiki waited for the door to close before turning to Yamura to ask something he had been meaning to. "Can you actually torture people?" He believed Suguru had been referring to something of that kind. Yamura shrugged.
"No, but if you're good with your numbers, you can kill them slowly. It doesn't hurt or anything. It's just humiliating."
"Well, that's not so bad then," said Seiki, slightly relieved at the limits of this game.
"Not so bad?"
He shot Seiki a dark glance.
"Way to go with making enemies in high places."
"Yeah, it seems to be going that way lately."
Yamura sighed, too dispirited to ask what Seiki meant.
"Well, what's done is done. Better get ourselves prepared."
He stood aside to avoid two people coming out through the door in succession before going in. The door slid closed, making Seiki wonder why there needed to be a door at all with this amount of traffic going in and out of the building. The edge of the door was worn from so many hands touching it, and the wood around was smooth, as if especially polished. Seiki let himself through and found himself alone in a simple room about 10 feet by 8. Quest completed. Home in Shinchioka. Level 3. 25 XP gained. Achievement earned. First territory. 15 XP gained. He had expected it to be a large room full of people, like the ground floor of Ichikeya Inn, and he looked around in surprise. The unpolished wood floor was bare but clean. There was a long, tiny window at the top of the wall which let through some light. There was no sign of either Isuke or Yamura or anyone else. The only thing in the room was a black wooden box on the floor against the far wall, just large enough to store a full-grown cat. It turned out to be empty. From outside, Seiki could hear Yamura shout, "You done yet?" Seiki emerged from the building and found Yamura leaning against a willow tree. He had donned a few pieces of gear and now had on a plus 12 defense arm guard that did not match the rest of his attire. Behind Seiki, the door slid closed on its own, before opening again to let Fumiko, level 5, in a blue kimono out. She seemed to be in a great hurry and paid Seiki no attention.
"It's instanced," Yamura said as he saw Seiki's slightly puzzled look. "Like dungeons. You just phase into your own Terry so everyone can be in the same place but can't see each other."
"I see," said Seiki as he watched Ruriko, level 5, run down the lane and disappear into the door behind him. Almost at the same time, Kira, level 7, slammed the door open as he came out. From outside, the place seemed very busy. It all made sense, but Seiki could not help feeling rather fascinated by something that to him looked like a trick camera shot. Yamura sighed as he decided the best way to save time was to explain.
"You can leave stuff in the room and no one can take it unless you stupidly invite them in. The boxes are all connected so you can put your things there and get them from your box in other territories you own. You have 20 slots right now, but you can upgrade."
He rattled off the points in one breath.
"Now hurry up. We've got Shogun reps to do."
Seiki quickly made sense of the explanation. Then he told Yamura that he was planning to explore the city a bit more.
"I just have a lot of time," he said by way of an explanation, not quite sure how to put it.
Yamura groaned.
Fine, explore. Yeah, go through the door 10 times to see how it works. Run around and feed some chickens and get like 10 XP.
Siki had a feeling that Yamura was speaking from experience.
Actually, that doesn't sound so bad, he laughed.
An idea seemed to flash through Yamura's head.
Okay, how long do you need?
Well, you go ahead.
You kidding? What if we run into those guys again? I'll tell you, man. What you need right now is to ramp up some Shogun rep so we can join a good clan.
Before Seiki could explain that he had no intention to do so, at least not now, Yamura had made up his mind.
Half an hour? Okay, 45 minutes max, but I'll be back. I'll do other stuff now. You know, those rep quests are impossible to solo.
He then ran past Seiki through the door, still shouting,
Half an hour!
Seiki opened the door to go after him and found himself alone again in his private Yanagi Alley room.
Of course,
said Seiki to himself, shaking his head as he imagined this would need a little getting used to. Following Yamura's advice, he put everything in the box except for a few gold coins, which he left in his cloth pouch. He then looked at the blue ceramic bottle with 3 servings of healing tonic and the white bottle of healing potion that he got as a free sample, and he decided to keep them on him. Without any unfinished quests left, Siki thought it would not hurt to take it easy for the time being and enjoy the scenery. South City was designed to be pleasant and welcoming, most likely to gently ease people into the city life of Shinchioka. The canal trickled gently with crystal clear water, revealing the occasional fish or turtle that was swimming beneath the water lilies that grew near the canal banks. He followed the road along the canal bank into a particularly quiet area, where a tiny, picturesque wooden bridge crossed the stream to the other side. A red dragonfly stopped and perched on the bridge railing, and he stopped to look at it in amazement. Suddenly, from somewhere ahead, he heard faint, disciplined voices shouting in unison. Wondering if it was what he thought it was, Siki tried to work out the direction it was coming from. The South City was a maze of little alleys closed off with bamboo fences. Soon, after zigzagging through it, he found a small doorway that led to a courtyard, beyond which was a large, open wooden building with a raised floor. Inside, students in white shirts and black hakama were standing in line, practicing their moves with bamboo swords. An old man, who appeared to be their master, walked around and occasionally fixed the students' posture.
Loosen your left hand grip, Koji, the old man was saying to one of them. You need to be able to change your grip in an instant.
It reminded Seiki of a life he missed so sorely, and he sat down under one of the trees in the courtyard and watched them practice with interest. The class was already drawing to an end, and the students soon bowed and slowly left. Seiki sighed heavily as he imagined they might go for a meal afterward, or maybe just hang out in the clearing by the river, or walk home late at night when the city was quiet and the ground was wet with rain. Memories that were forever going to become more and more distant. The thought plunged him into a sea of nauseous despair, and he fought to push it away.
Young man, are you lost?
The question startled Seiki. It was the master, who had walked out to the edge of the raised practice hall. He was dressed in a simple gray kimono, with a sheathed sword thrust through his obi, his eyes deep and kind. Seiki did not know how to answer and could only look at him.
Interested in the way of the sword, then? Said the old master.
Still staring at the old man, Seiki nodded. It did not have to be a sword. It could be anything, and he would have said yes. The master swordsman motioned for him to approach.
Come here, young man.
As Seiki got up to his feet, one of the students came running through the main door at the end of the practice hall. That was when Seiki realized he must have come through the back courtyard door, which would explain the lack of signs. Quickly glancing around, he found a large sign above the practice hall that read Nansei Dojo. The student approached them.
Master Tsujihara, I forgot to tell you.
The student noticed Seiki and stopped short. Master Tsujihara turned to look at him.
What is it, Sato?
Sato, a thin young man, eyed Seiki curiously.
Master Tsujihara, is this a new student?
Master Tsujihara smiled as he looked at Seiki.
Well, that depends on him.
Before Seiki could reply, another student rushed in, crying in alarm.
Master Tsujihara, it's the Umezawa clan!
He tripped and fell on the floor.
They've brought people!
At the same moment, a group of people burst through the door into the practice hall, heavily armed with swords and sticks. One of the invaders caught up with a newcomer and swung a staff at him, knocking him unconscious. Sato cried,
Maida! and grabbed his bamboo sword as he rushed to defend his friend. The master was also there in a flash, and with a sharp swing of his sword, he felled two attackers in one blow. More men rushed in with shouts. Seki counted almost 20 of them, and they filled almost half the practice hall. The Umezawa men proved overwhelming for Sato, who soon let out a cry as a sword cut through his arm. The master was still fighting four or five of them and could not yet come to his aid. One man from Umezawa cackled as he raised his staff to incapacitate Sato with a finishing blow. At that moment, Seki ran forward, leapt onto the raised floor of the practice hall, and landed a punch on the attacker's cheek. The man fell over and went still. Another Umezawa man tried to hit him with a stick, but Seki spun around and kicked him backward. The master had also managed to knock three men to the ground. Sato cried, "Mida!" Everyone paused and turned to look. One of the attackers, who appeared to be their leader, was holding a knife to Maida's throat.
"Drop your swords," the man shouted.
He was a rugged man with a loose shirt, its long, open sleeves barely hiding his ringed copper arm guards. His nose bleeding and his cheek swollen, Maida seemed only half-conscious. He struggled weakly as he was held up by two men, one on each side. All eyes were now on Master Tsujihara in anticipation. The master's voice was calm.
"Let the boy go, Umezawa."
He slowly put down his sword on the floor. Sato had been looking at his master for instructions and put down his bamboo sword as well. Umezawa seemed pleased.
"Destroy the place," cried Umezawa. "You dare," the master barked.
It was a voice of authority, and Umezawa's men shrunk back in fear.
"If you are here to challenge my dojo, then adhere to challenge rules. Is your dojo more important than this boy's life?" Umezawa asked. "Tsujihara, your time is over. Your old creed is dead."
Seki glanced at them, unsure what he was supposed to do. As he caught the master's eye, he realized the old man was looking at him intently. His eyes glanced slowly toward the rack of bamboo swords on the wall beside him before looking back at Seki. Seki understood. He was standing closest to Umezawa. He glanced at the master again, whose gaze was now on the man holding Maida's left shoulder. Umezawa continued to gloat.
"If you and your students just walk away, no one would need to get hurt." "And if you walk away right now, no one would need to get hurt," said the master.
At that moment, the master met Seki's eyes and nodded very slightly. That was the signal. Seki rushed forward, aiming at the man on Maida's left. Umezawa had not been expecting this, and in alarm, he got ready to push the blade into Maida's throat. Thankfully, Seki had already reached them, his full momentum knocking the man on the left backward, forcing him to drop Maida to the floor as he lost his balance. The knife missed Maida by an inch. Umezawa let out a furious roar at this unexpected development and lifted his knife to stab down at Seki. In a split second, the master had thrown one of the bamboo swords toward them, which Seki caught as he turned around to face Umezawa. With the bamboo sword in his right hand, he instinctively used his focused strike. He could feel his energy shooting forward from his hand through to the bamboo sword in a low, direct pierce to the man's torso. Umezawa staggered backward, and his men dropped what they were doing as they rushed to his aid. Sato quickly ran across the floor and dragged Maida to safety.
"Congratulations! You have learned how to use focused strike with a weapon."
Seki, for a moment, had completely forgotten it was all a scripted event. He glanced at the men he had knocked to the floor. Thug, level 3, HP 1 of 60. Thug, level 3, HP 1 of 60. Thug, level 4, HP 1 of 75. Sato was tending to Maida, HP 5 of 60. He realized then why it had been so easy. Seki looked back at the leader. Umezawa, level unknown, had been helped onto his feet again by his men and was taking a calculating look at Seki. Now that he had no hostage, Umezawa changed his tone.
"Who is this, Tsujihara?" he scowled. "I don't recall him as one of your students, and I don't want to waste my time killing random youths who happen to wander by."
He then pointed the knife at Master Tsujihara.
"I'm here to challenge your dojo, so send one of your students to fight me."
The master smiled. With his eyes still on Umezawa, he asked,
"Young man, what is your name?"
Seki realized the old man was talking to him.
"Seki," he said, sounding more confident than he thought he was. "All right, Seki," said the master. "Watch."
Master Tsujihara held his unsheathed sword in his right hand, and he adopted a low stance with his knees bent. His right leg then stepped to the side as his torso spun around. and his sword arm swung out in a wide circular sweep, finishing with the sword held high.
"Focus your energy on the tip of the sword," said the master. "You saw that, Seki?"
Seki nodded. "Yes, Master Tsuchihara." He copied the move, and as he concentrated on the tip of the sword, he felt a bout of energy traveling from the middle of his body down his arm to the end of the bamboo weapon. The sweep felt powerful, and cut through the air with a loud swish and a wide, open stroke that felt completely different from the more concentrated, focused strike. Seki's heart leapt with joy at the exhilaration. "Congratulations. You have learned a new ability. Sweeping Blade. Range, 0.5. Damage, 70. Energy required, 48.
"Now you wouldn't say he is not one of my students, would you?"
Master Tsuchihara asked the challenger. Umezawa had been watching with disinterest. He snorted and tossed his knife aside, which landed on the wood floor. The man then held out his right hand, and one of his men placed a long sword in it. With a hilt in his grip, Umezawa cast off the loose wooden sheath with a flick of his wrist, revealing a straight, gleaming, double-edged blade.
"You think you can simply teach him a few tricks and he'll be able to survive fighting me?" said the man.
As he turned towards Seki with a menacing grin, Seki found out he now had a level. Umezawa, level 7, elite. HP 250 of 250.
Chapter 8. Even with his experience as a professional fighter, using a sword was ultimately different. Seki had to make a few conscious adjustments to his approach. Umezawa's sword had a longer reach than his bamboo sword, so he needed a way to get close while avoiding the blade. He carefully studied his new ability. Sweeping Blade, Seki, level 7. Strike up to 4 enemies with a horizontal sweeping slice, dealing up to 70 damage split between targets struck, with the first target taking the most damage. Requires a weapon to use. 8-second lockout. Required energy, 52. Ability modification, none. Enhancement, none. Seki knew how to brace himself for punches and kicks, but against weapons he had no idea what to expect. Umezawa was holding the sword forward in a neutral stance. Seki realized he had to attack first. Feigning dashing at the man, Seki abruptly stopped right out of range as Umezawa swung his sword at him. Both hands gripping the bamboo sword, Seki dived low and used a focused strike, hitting the man on his leg. Not daring to take the blade, he rolled to one side. Umezawa kicked out his left foot and Seki blocked it with his arm. But that was apparently not what the man was trying to do. Umezawa quickly closed in and stomped down on Seki's shoulder, both his hands gripping the hilt of his sword as he prepared to pierce down at Seki's back. Seki twisted his body and the man's foot slipped off his shoulder. Seki's right hand shot toward the back of Umezawa's knee and sent him staggering forward. Seki then leapt to his feet and rushed in with another focused strike with his bamboo sword, which connected on the man's lower spine. Umezawa, level 7, elite. HP 111 of 250. Suddenly, something struck Seki in his back. It was one of Umezawa's men who had snuck up from behind. Another blade swept and cut him on the leg, leaving a long trail of blood and a feeling like an ice-cold needle dragged across his skin. Seki drew a short breath in surprise at the sensation, but he would not let that unsettle him. Quickly, he spun around in the stance he had just learned and used the sweeping blade to knock both men backward. For some reason, he could not complete the full swing and the move seemed a little off. Umezawa was already behind him. Seki dropped low just in time to avoid a direct slash across his arm. The blade left a shallow cut on his shoulder. Out of energy, Seki could only swing his sword at Umezawa, which the man blocked with his arm. The bamboo blade clanged against the arm guard, dealing barely any damage. Umezawa's cut was not significant. Unfortunately, he was still an elite, meaning the cut had brought down a fifth of Seki's health. The earlier damage from his two men was slightly less significant. Coming to the conclusion that he did not really know what he was doing with a sword, Seki decided to stick to what he knew best and rushed in for the close game. His left palm blocked Umezawa's sword arm, and he struck the man with a bamboo sword on the body. His leg then kicked out to trip his adversary. From behind, he could sense Umezawa's men closing in. Ducking under and around Umezawa's sword as the man fell forward, Seki struck out in the same manner as the sweeping blade. Without energy to spend, the move was much weaker. Still, it managed to knock one man backward. Umezawa, level 7, elite, HP 84 of 250, had already recovered.
He was running in with a long yell, his sword held diagonally in front of him, ready for a slash. Seki stepped aside at the last second. With both hands, he brought the bamboo sword down on the man's side, and followed by a kick that sent the man tumbling on the floor. Another man stabbed Seki from behind, sending freezing chills down his back. Slightly surprised that his health barely dipped, Seki wasted no time. He rushed in at Umezawa, his full sweeping blade catching the man in the jaw, then following through to another who was coming up behind him, and a third man who was running in with a stick, sending them all flying backward. This one was a full move and felt much steadier. Seki readied himself again, his sword gripped firmly in his hands. None of them got up. Umezawa was lying still on the floor, groaning, his sword lying haplessly beside him. Master Tsujihara took a step forward and the rest of Umezawa's standing men drew back in fear.
"My students are not for you to pick on, Umezawa," said the master. "Now leave."
Umezawa, level 7, elite, HP 1 of 250, glared at them and quickly gathered his men and left without another word. The men scurried after him, helping along their injured. Seki could hear them clattering through the door and down the hallway.
"Don't you dare show your face here again!" cried Sato after them.
Maeda was starting to wake up, and he moaned. After the master decided that Maeda's injury was nothing too serious, the two students took their leave. Master Tsujihara finally turned to Seki.
"That was not bad," he said in a kind of half-approval that Seki was used to.
Seki sighed. He knew the master was right. He had believed having a sword would make things easier, and although the fight was relatively simple compared to everything he had been through so far, he could tell it was very sloppy. Umezawa's level had been tuned to match his, but Seki had far out-leveled all his other opponents. He was so used to things being hard now that this ultimately felt a little unsatisfying.
"You are not used to weapons, are you?" asked Master Tsujihara.
Seki was surprised he knew.
"You were treating it as if it was a wrestling match," said the master.
Seki stared at him.
"Your stances are all bare-handed fighting stances," the old man went on. "A bit risky against armed opponents. You would do well learning a few sword stances."
If Seki had had doubts about Master Tsujihara, he was now completely sold, and a childlike sense of excitement filled his heart.
"Master Tsujihara, please teach me."
The master sounded pleased.
"Come back tomorrow, or when you are ready."
He bent down to pick up his sword, which was still on the floor, and thrust it through his obi.
"Keep the bamboo sword."
"You have received bamboo sword, plus 17 attack, damage 1.3, speed 1.1, range 0.5. Quest accepted. No pain, no gain. Level 4.
"Can I start immediately?"
asked Seki with a kind of giddy enthusiasm he had not felt for a long time. He heard someone clear his throat. Yamura was sitting at the edge of the practice hall, leaning against a pillar. There was a messy pile of wood shavings in front of him. Seki had no idea how long he had been there.
"How did you find me?"
"No pain, no gain?" Yamura asked, ignoring the question.
"Yeah? Just look at it. You can't finish it today."
"No pain, no gain. Level 4 quest information. Get started on the path of the sword. Practice at the dojo until you gain the approval of the master swordsman. You will receive 60 XP.
"It's rather vague," said Seki, not sure what Yamura meant.
"Go ahead, try it," said Yamura.
"Try that move again," said Master Tsujihara, taking no notice of Yamura.
Seki did as he was told and swung out his bamboo sword with his newly acquired sweeping blade. The master used a bamboo sword to poke at Seki's right foot.
"Wider," he said. "Now try again."
Seki did it again, this time a bit steadier.
"Better," said Master Tsujihara. "Again."
The third sweeping blade pretty much used up all his energy. "Quest progress. Gain the approval of the master swordsman. 1% complete." Yamura laughed at Seki's surprised expression.
"See what I mean? You'll be doing this for hours. They really make you work for your abilities. Talk about realistic. Then for the next one, you better have 200 gold lying around so you're practically forced to pick up a crafting skill."
Seki looked at the pile of wood in front of Yamura.
"Is that what you're doing?"
"Nah," said Yamura. "We've got the longest range in the game, but we've got to keep making our own friggin' arrows. Talk about realistic again. I mean, you can buy them, but it's not like I have extra gold to spend. And with rapid shots, you waste a bunch of arrows that don't even hit anything, so they're gone quick. And instead of being able to pick them up, no, they fade. So much for realism. Seki just realized he did not know what class Yamura was.
So you're a...
Ryoshi, said Yamura. Hunter, archer, ranger, something like that. But anyway, time to go, man. You've got your second move. Let's get to the Shogun.
I still have another free ability slot, said Seki wistfully. It had unlocked at level 6, and he had just found a dojo he wanted to spend a bit more time in.
Like I said, if you don't have 200 gold to spare, you can forget it. Come on. I've only managed to negotiate 2 more hours tonight because I've got to wake up early tomorrow.
Seki just now realized something about Yamura.
If we're lucky, we can make about 20 gold, Yamura was saying. Come on, man, one quest. One quest.
He seemed a little desperate. Seki threw his hands up.
All right, you lead the way.
They took leave of Master Tsujihara, who told Seki to come back the next day. Yamura knew where he was going, and once Seki agreed, he seemed in high spirits. The sun was now sinking in the sky, and the nameless citizens of South City were out on the streets with lanterns. The road lamps along the canal banks reflected brightly in the shimmering water, giving a peaceful orange glow to the whole area. Seki learned that the east and west cities were PvP zones. The north was where the Shogun's palace was, and it had different combat rules.
Unlike South City, where you can't even attack people if you want to, in the palace you can actually draw your sword, but the guards immediately throw you in prison. Not sure why they would do that, Yamura said.
There turned out to be many ways in and out of South City, and soon they found themselves in a dense sea of buildings. Yamura stopped at one small intersection and looked out warily both ways before stepping through. Seki followed him.
Welcome to East City. City combat rules apply. PvP status enabled.
East City seemed a bit more crowded with building than people, and rather dark and grim compared to the picturesque South. Shops and stalls were sparse, as well as street lamps, and a lot of the alleys were completely unlit.
Shortcut, said Yamura as he turned down one dark alley.
They came across one old man in tattered clothes sitting in front of a building offering a quest called Tanaka's Belongings, level 6, but Yamura convinced Seki it was not worth it.
I've done it. You go pick up stuff from around the city. It's tedious, he said.
The area turned out to be quite dense with quest starting points, and many of the buildings where you could go in featured a few citizens who talked about the good old days when the Emperor was in power. Seki soon started to have an uncanny feeling that behind the still walls, East City was actually heavily populated. The citizens were somehow afraid to come out and were only peeping through cracks to look at them. He was not sure why he had that feeling that they were being watched by 1,000 hidden eyes. Yamura seemed completely unaffected and was confidently making him turn into another very dark alley. All of a sudden, Yamura squinted.
What's that?
Seki followed his gaze but could see nothing. Yamura had already started running ahead in pursuit of whatever he had spotted. Seki ran after him and caught up with him at a narrow fork in the road.
What is it?
I'm not sure, said Yamura, looking around again.
Then he shouted, There!
As he dashed off, Seki started to realize they were going further and further into the maze that was East City, and that the streets were incredibly empty. The buildings on both sides of the alley loomed high and gray. Yamura had stopped again, his brows knitted.
What does it look like? Like a piece of red cloth, said Yamura.
Seki looked at him uneasily. Mysterious pieces of cloth were always bad news. Yamura added,
And it has no level.
Whatever that was, it could not be good.
What about the Shogun? Seki asked.
Yamura breathed,
Screw the Shogun. This one is better. There it is again.
He raced off, and Seki had no choice but to follow him. Seki had not caught the slightest glimpse of what Yamura was chasing. They soon ran into a dead end in a small alley.
I swear it came this way, said Yamura.
The two-story buildings around them seemed completely abandoned, lit by only the pale white light of the moon high in the sky. Seki could feel the hair at the back of his neck stand up as something appeared behind them from the corner of his eyes. It was red.
Red cape or blue cape?
A cold, raspy voice asked. Yamura let out a startled yelp as they both spun around to face it. Akamanto, level unknown, said again,
Red cape or blue cape?
It looked like a tall man behind a grotesque white mask. Its whole body was hidden in a long red cloak that ran to the ground. They glanced at each other.
What's this? Yamura asked.
Red cape or blue cape?
That was when Seiki felt a chill descending around him and starting to eat away at his health. He realized that you needed to answer it.
Red,
said Seiki. At the same time, Yamura burst out, Blue! The thing let out a screech and its right hand shot forward. Seiki ducked in time to avoid what appeared to be a razor-sharp blade. But before he could react again, the blade swiped down and left a shallow gash across his side.
I will make you red,
cried the thing. As Seiki threw himself to the left to avoid another strike, the Akamanto burst forward and fell on top of Yamura, its left hand on his throat, strangling him.
I will make you blue.
Seiki grabbed his bamboo sword and aimed a focused strike at the Akamanto's shoulder, knocking it off Yamura, who gasped for breath as he scrambled to his feet. The Akamanto, level 12, rare, HP 772 of 840, flipped over unnaturally onto the ground and bolted up. Seiki rushed in and struck it across the face before it could lunge at Yamura again. It did not react to the blow, but stabbed out with its blade. Yamura had already grabbed his bow, and he let loose an arrow which struck the Akamanto in the torso. Akamanto, level 12, rare, HP 692 of 840.
What the heck with that kind of health?
Cried Yamura as he noticed the numbers. The Akamanto turned toward him and leapt from the floor, aiming for Yamura's throat. Seiki brought the bamboo sword downward on its back and could feel the impact reverberating up his arm. The mob crashed down on the ground slightly short of Yamura. It had managed to grab hold of his legs and bring him to the ground. The blade in its right hand suddenly stabbed backward at Seiki, who was trying to hit it again with a focused strike, forcing him to jump back. Yamura yelled in horror as the Akamanto dragged itself up his body. He struck it across the face with his bow, but the monster hardly flinched. Again, its left hand shot out to wrap around his throat. Yamura's health was dropping fast. Seiki landed another focused strike on its shoulder, flipping it off Yamura. The creature raised its bladed right hand and left a cut on Seiki's leg. Thankfully, it was another shallow cut, but the level difference was still significant. Even if it was not an elite, Seiki's health still dropped by a quarter.
Red,
it hissed. Seiki knew that being trapped at the end of the alley limited their movement and put them at a severe disadvantage. He tried to run past the mob to gain better grounds for the fight, but the Akamanto's movements defied laws of physics. The bastard could propel itself from impossible positions, slashing out with its long blade and blocking him. Yamura had backed himself into a corner and had fired two more arrows. His health was only at half now.
We can't get trapped here, cried Seiki.
Then he thought of something. He dashed forward and made use of his sweeping blade. The impact threw the Akamanto to the right, leaving a slight opening. Seiki knew now that, based on their answers to its question, the creature would only try to cut him and strangle Yamura. So for a time being, his companion was safe from its left arm.
Run!
He yelled. Yamura dashed forward past the Akamanto, which had jerked its bladed right arm up toward Seiki's chest. Three of Yamura's arrows flew in rapid succession and hit it on the arm, slowing the attack by a split second which allowed Seiki to twist himself in midair and avoid the blade. Seiki landed in a roll and leapt to his feet. Akamanto, level 12, rare, HP 332 of 840, gave them no rest and it came screeching at them. Yamura was out of energy and Seiki only had enough for one focused strike.
Run!
Cried Yamura as he turned around.
No, you can't run! Cried Seiki.
The thing was faster than them, and getting caught from behind would be the end of them. The creature had reached him and was slicing at him again with its blade. He managed to block with his bamboo sword, and as it slashed at him again, he aimed and kicked the blade away with his foot. Seiki took his stance, and his focused strike hit the Akamanto in the middle of its body, sending it staggering backward. As it fell, its blade lifted at an impossible angle and slashed him on his forearm. It was a direct cut, and Seiki gasped at the chill, almost dropping his sword.
Red!
It hissed again. Immediately, the Akamanto came flying back. With his health lingering at half, Seiki did not know if he could afford to take another direct hit. He turned and ran, trying to get into a better position. Out of the blue, the Akamanto stopped short, as if it had run into an invisible wall. Seiki then noticed that the bottom of its cape was caught in something on the ground that looked like a spiked trap. The Akamanto reached out with its blade, but could not quite reach him.
We're not in a group, so don't step on that,
cried Yamura, tossing out yet another trap. After a short instant, the trap unraveled and the Akamanto flew forward again, before quickly getting ensnared in another. Seiki took this chance to catch his breath. He was now out of energy. Akamanto, level 12, rare, HP 262 of 840.
It only lasts for 4 seconds each, and I can't keep this up, cried Yamura.
He
He was using all his energy to toss out each of the traps. And I'm not anywhere near to being able to use my focused shot.
He had to act fast before Yamura was completely out. Seki ran in with a calculated move. As the Akamanto swung its blade at him, he parried as hard as he could, with both hands clutching tight at his bamboo sword, pushing the blade back. At the same time, he jumped and landed a roundhouse kick in the middle of its torso. The creature's blade twisted and started sliding off his bamboo sword. Seki's right hand let go of the hilt and struck the monster on the shoulder. His fist hit bone. Under the cloak, it was all bone. Not having time to be horrified, Seki grabbed its bone shoulder and jerked it forward. With the bamboo sword still pushing against the blade, this move would have forced any opponent to drop the weapon. But this thing was not human, and its arm bent back at an awkward angle. Suddenly it spun around in almost a full circle with its feet still locked in the trap, tossing Seki off to one side. The trap expired and the creature went straight after Yamura, whose energy had recharged just enough for him to throw another trap. Backing away, the Ryoshi shot two more arrows at the Akamanto. Level 12, rare, HP 167 of 840. Seki ran at it from behind, hitting it on the head with the sword, then again on the body. His energy was still not enough for a special move. The creature's sword arm swung backward and grazed Seki's shoulder. The trap expired once more, and the Akamanto lunged forward at Yamura with unexpected force, landing itself on him. Its bony left hand, still hidden under the red cloak, pushed down on Yamura's throat.
"Blue," it hissed.
Yamura struggled as his health dipped dangerously. With luck, Seki's energy had just reached the minimum threshold. He ran in and swiped the creature on his head with his sweeping blade, knocking it off the Ryoshi. It was still not enough. Akamanto, level 12, rare, HP 98 of 840, quickly recovered and turned around, its sword arm ready to strike out again. Seki jumped, landed with both feet on its outstretched arm, bringing his bamboo sword down on its face. He rained blows on its head again and again. A chilly cut ran up his leg and he lost his balance, falling onto his knees. But it was all over. They had won. Akamanto, level 12, rare, HP 0 of 840, lootable. Akamanto slain, 136 XP gained. Seki was panting heavily, his hand still holding on tight to the bamboo sword, which he just realized had become slippery from his own blood. He pushed himself away from the creature, now a pile of rags on the ground, and turned to look at Yamura. The Ryoshi was pale, his health a sliver of the total, but he was alive. He had sat up and for a moment was too shaken to say anything. His bow was on the ground and he seemed completely spent. Seki examined his wounds and was rather surprised to find his clothes all soaked with blood. His health was only at a little better percentage than Yamura's. It was all quiet now, and the wind had picked up. The buildings around were still and silent, and the moon was still high up. Seki figured the fight must not have lasted a very long time, though it had felt like forever. With more practice with the bamboo sword, he was starting to understand the nuances of his two special abilities better. Sweeping blade was slightly weaker, but in practice it was faster to use and required less time to get into the starting stance. It also had a decent knockback effect.
"Okay, that must have been a trick question," said Yamura. He was now looking into his half-empty quiver, shaking it in his hand.
"What?"
Seki had been lost in his own thoughts. "Red or blue? Must have been a trick question," said Yamura as he started to pick himself up. "Like, what if you answer green or something?"
"That would be an insta-death." A person stepped out of the shadows. "Speaking from experience, of course." Gin, level 11, was all dressed in black and green. It was too dark to really see his face, but it was clear he had an arrow knocked in his bow pointing straight at them. Seki knew how to recognize Ryoshi now.
"You have to choose either red or blue," said Gin. "Pick your poison, as they say."
Behind him, Chika, level 9, appeared, half her face covered behind black cloth, a short blade in her obi. Although there were no other obvious signs, Seki was quite sure she was a ninja.
"Now kindly step away from the dead body, please," said Gin.
Yamura stared as it became clear what they were after.
"Have you people got no shame?" he cried. "We killed it."
"Haven't you heard of the East City Bandits?" said Gin.
"Of course we've got no shame.
Or you can loot it right now and we kill you and take the loot from you. That's perfectly fine."
"Your choice,"
said Chika, giggling.
"Just walk out of range and there'll be no more bloodshed tonight," said Gin. "All right, folks."
Siki's health had recovered to about a third. and he judged he could now take at least one blow from Chika. He was not sure if he or Yamura could survive a direct shot from Gin.
"Oh, you wish?" cried Yamura. "After all we did, you expect us to just walk away? And after I gave up Shogun reps for this?"
Gin drew his bowstring tighter.
"I know you two gentlemen are just buying time here." He flexed his eyebrows up and down. "But I'm sure you understand that I cannot afford to wait for your life to recover."
Yamura was still talking.
"Yeah, yeah, charismatic robbers. That's your whole shtick, isn't it? Okay, don't tell me you rob the rich to give to the poor, too."
"You've got to the count of five,"
Chika chirped in. "One," said Gin. Seki glanced at Yamura. Although he did not know exactly what Yamura was thinking, from his expression it was clear that he was not giving up so easily. "Two." Yamura was looking at the two self-proclaimed bandits as if weighing his options. "Three." Yamura screamed as he pointed to the ground.
"Holy crap, it's not dead!"
In the split second it took for the two bandits to react, Seki threw the bamboo sword at Gin. The man instinctively flinched, offering Seki an opening. Seki leapt at him, and they both crashed onto the ground, almost on top of the dead Akamanto. Chika unsheathed her weapon. Almost at the same time, two normal arrows came flying from Yamura's bow, one of which she blocked with her knife. The second arrow struck her on the arm. Seki grabbed hold of Gin's wrist and tried to slam it to the ground to have the Ryoshi let go of his bow. Gin tossed out a trap on top of him, and Seki had to roll off to avoid it as it snapped shut noisily. From the corner of his eyes, Seki could see Yamura finishing drinking from a small bottle, which he then cast aside, shattering it into a puff of smoke as it hit the ground. His health was again full. He grabbed an arrow and shot at Gin. Gin, level 11, HP 402 of 496. Still lying in the dirt, knocked an arrow to return fire. Seki grabbed his arm again to throw off his aim. A hail of shurikens landed around him, two striking Seki in the back for moderate damage.
"Whoa," said Gin as a few hit him as well, but he must have been in the same group as Chika, since his health took no damage.
Out of nowhere, a man's voice yelled,
"Brawl!"
Chika's blade started flying in the air in a circle, and Seki remembered the spinning blade. The dagger slashed Yamura on his side as he shot two more arrows at her. Gin had placed another trap, and Seki rolled off again, grabbing the bamboo sword, which was now within reach. As Seki and Gin both scrambled to their feet, Chika tossed out another hail of shurikens, which Seki jumped over. He rushed at her and used his focused strike. She managed to partially block with her dagger, but she still fell backward from the force of the impact. It was an absolute mess, and suddenly Kikuo, level 15, was in the mix with his curved sword, which he swung at Chika. Seki felt something behind him, and he ducked as Hitomi, level 12, flashed by in fox form. Gin was firing multiple arrows at once at everybody, which must have been rapid shots.
"Run!"
cried Yamura, and Seki dashed out of there, avoiding a familiar sword swipe that he recognized as the sweeping blade. They ran out of the alley as more people rushed in. Seki was surprised many of them tried to throw out a casual attack at them as they ran past, but paid no more attention after missing and continued to head toward the brawl.
"Got potions?"
yelled Yamura as they were still making their exit. Seki did, but as he reached into the cloth pouch, he felt three rapid, gentle bursts of healing on him, then another bout, filling up his HP.
"What?"
asked Yamura as Seki slowed down to look around. There was no one in sight but those who were running down the alley. Seki shook his head.
"Not sure."
Next thing they knew, they had to throw themselves to both sides to avoid Minamoto, level 16, who rode by on a white horse and tried to take a swipe at them. The man grunted as it missed, but kept on riding.
"Let's go," said Yamura. "There's a right turn we can take over there."
As the Ryoshi turned to run forward again, he stopped dead in his tracks and cursed. His gaze was fixed in the distance.
"What is it?"
asked Seki. They were in a long alley. He could still hear the fight going on behind him, but there was nothing ahead except darkness. Yamura cursed again.
"I can't see anything," said Seki.
"Zoom, Ryoshi's perk,"
said Yamura absently, glancing back behind him.
"Okay, we gotta go back."
He turned around and started running back down the alley.
"Come on!"
he shouted. Seki decided to just trust him. As they raced back, Seki took a look behind him and saw two riders galloping in. One rider, in white, was on a black horse. The other was all gray, both horse and rider. With a lump in his throat, Seki recognized the gigantic blade on the first rider's back, the Oni Cleaver. Seki understood now that Yamura was planning to slip away in the chaos of the mass fighting, which he could now discern right ahead. The two riders caught up with them when they were almost at the edge of the fray. At first, the riders did not seem to recognize them, but as their horses galloped past, one of them turned around and with a word, they veered their horses to an abrupt stop.
"Look what we've got here,"
said Suguru of the Rogami clan, level 23. Kojiro of the Rogami clan, level 22, reached behind him and grabbed his Oni cleaver. A delighted smile appeared on his lips.
"Two lambs to the slaughter."
Chapter 9 Seki knew right then he was going to die. The alley was straight and narrow, and although he could spot a tiny lane that broke off to the right, the two Rogami members were directly blocking it. The brawl further behind was too distant to be taken into consideration. They could run, but he doubted they would get very far before the riders caught up on their mounts. With that kind of level disparity, a single touch from any of them would mean instant death. Seki made a resolution to do the only thing he could, which was to die swinging for the fences. He tightened his grip on the bamboo sword, strangely curious as to whether he would be able to get a single hit in before they slaughtered him. Yamura seemed ready to bolt at any moment, but as he noticed Seki readying himself, he took a deep breath and prepared to take a stand too.
"Not running?" asked Kojiro.
His giant weapon swooshed through the air as he brandished it in a large figure-eight loop. The Oni cleaver was a rectangular blade at least 4 feet in length and 2 across. The blunt end had a series of holes pierced in it, each with its own golden ring. The hilt was thick and wrapped in leather. Seki guessed this weapon was most likely what had been responsible for Isuke's large wound across the chest.
"Nothing to say, either,"
said Suguru mockingly. Seki's observation had been right before. Neither the man nor his horse cast a shadow under the moonlight, and in such a shade of gray they seemed like an apparition.
"Too scared now that you've stepped outside of the nursery?"
Seki glanced at Kojiro's weapon. The Oni cleaver was slow. The amount of damage it could deliver did not matter, since any weapon, or even a bare hand strike from Kojiro, would be more than enough to kill him. Beside him, on his right, Yamura shifted, as if unsure whether he should reach for his bow or not. Kojiro was getting impatient.
"Guess so," he said.
He looked at Seki, then at Yamura, then back at Seki again, a satisfied smile appearing on his lips.
"Let me introduce the Oni cleaver. I'm sure you'll remember it."
With these words, the man urged his horse to charge forward at Seki, the gigantic blade in his right hand raised high. Seki did not doubt its range, its power, or the fact that the man was going for a literal overkill with this. The alley was narrow, both a curse and a blessing. It meant there was very little room to dodge, but at the same time it also left very little room for Kojiro to be flexible in his attack. Seki knew he only had one shot. As Kojiro closed in, Seki slid down low right in front of the horse and braced himself, betting on a realistic reaction from the beast. The horse, true to its instincts, jumped over him. Yamura yelled, "Hit the horse!" Seki launched a focused strike with his bamboo sword. He managed a glancing hit on the mount's belly before having to twist his own body to avoid its hind legs as the animal neighed and threw off its rider. From Kojiro's reaction, it was not the first time this had happened, and the man landed easily on his feet. Completely unruffled and ignoring his horse, which was already galloping away, he turned around, the Oni cleaver in his grip still in a striking stance. Seki was getting to his feet when something that felt like a cold hand wrapped itself around his heart, spreading frozen chills through his body. He gasped and dropped back down to his knees as icy paralysis took over him from the neck down. As it reached his wrist, his hand went numb, and the bamboo sword slid from his fingers. From the corner of his eyes, he could see Yamura frozen with his bow half-drawn, his eyes wide with surprise. Seki struggled, but he could not get his body to move. Kojiro breathed out loudly and lowered his blade. He seemed a little disappointed as his gaze switched from Seki to his clanmate.
"I didn't know your freeze had a disarm."
From behind him, Seki could hear Suguru's reply.
"It's new. I thought I would try it out. Too bad time's up."
His voice grew chilly at the end with a sneer. Kojiro walked towards Seki. The rings on the back of the Oni cleaver clinked like agitated chainmail as he raised the blade high for the execution.
"Too bad indeed,"
the man said, grinning as Seki met his eyes. Suddenly someone yelled, "Patrols!" At that very moment, the coldness unraveled around Seki. That was all he needed. Seki threw himself aside just in time to dodge Kojiro's falling blade. The Oni cleaver was a heavy weapon, and it slammed into the ground in a burst of thick dust. Siki grabbed the bamboo sword as he hurried to his feet. Without wasting a single second, he struck out with sweeping blade, which did practically no damage to Kojiro, but still managed to push the man back a few inches. He took a quick glance and saw that a stray shuriken from somewhere had hit Suguru, who flicked it off him with an annoyed expression. Surprised by the attack, Kojiro raised his blade again. Shouts were already rising from behind as people started to flee from the patrols. Naoko, level 18, dashed past them without so much as a glance, followed by two more people, one on foot and one on horseback. In the chaos, Yamura could be heard shouting, "Go!" Seki made a mad dash past Kojiro into the stream of people that were rushing out as Kojiro tried to swing the blade at him. He heard curses in his back as the giant weapon presumably hit someone else instead, then more curses and gallops as the elite patrols caught up with some of the brawlers and zapped them away. "This way!" Yamada cried as he turned into the tiny lane on the right, which was barely wide enough to run through. Seki followed him. For a very brief moment, he felt a different kind of sickening coldness wrapping around him again, but as he dived into the safety of the little lane, it dispersed like a phantom fog. Seki shivered. The sensation was completely gone now, as if it had not happened at all, leaving him mysteriously at half health. It was a little shortcut, and they very soon emerged on the other side to find themselves once again in a long alley. From the parallel road they had just escaped from, chaotic shouts could still be heard. Yamura looked carefully to the right, then grimaced. Seki still could not make out anything apart from the shadowy darkness, and he secretly wondered how far ahead that Ryoshi could see. Yamura turned to look the other way, squinting.
"Oh, come on!"
he cried in dismay. He then decided to take his chances straight ahead.
"Patrols?"
Seki asked as he followed him.
"Lots of them,"
said Yamura, sounding very unhappy. To be perfectly honest, Seki was relieved that it was not the Rogami clan. Between the two unknowns, prison sounded by far a better option than death.
"They stopped chasing you after 10 minutes, but there's one coming down this way, so we're gonna get trapped soon,"
said Yamura.
"Look for a building we could go in."
The buildings on both sides of the alley seemed completely abandoned. They found a few doors, but they were all tightly locked. The bamboo fences were high enough that scaling them was out of the question.
"Remind me to pick up lockpicking?"
Yamura grunted as he shook one of the doors. Seki tried a nearby low window, but it would not budge. Glancing into the darkness behind, he could now make out a rider slowly coming into view. Yamura rushed ahead and tried another door in front, which also remained locked. To the right, a ground floor window slid open, and Amaya, level 14, leaned out.
"Trouble with the law?"
Yamura jumped. From her open window, Seki could see that the inside of her room was brightly lit, and the light fell on the dark alley in a large square. Something was slightly off about the scene, but he could not tell what.
10 gold for an invite," she said sweetly.
"That's ridiculous," cried Yamura.
Seki glanced behind him again. The rider was gaining ground, and he could hear the horse's hooves on the ground now. Yamura whispered,
"Hey, how much gold do you have on you?"
Seki remembered keeping some on him.
"Not sure. Got 5?
"I think so." The rider had come into full view, indeed a city patrol, level 30 elite. The officer gave a start as he spotted them.
"Stop right there," shouted the officer, urging his horse faster. "In the name of the shogun."
5 for 2 invites,
cried Yamura. The city patrol yelled,
"Do not resist arrest."
The girl stalled.
"Well,
come on, please,"
cried Yamura, banging on her door desperately. The patrol officer had now raised his right hand in preparation. Amaya giggled.
"All right, deal.
Amaya invites you to a group."
"Accept, accept, accept,"
Yamura yelled, either to accept the group invitation or to tell Seki to do so. "You are now in a group with Amaya, level 14, and Yamura, level 8. A door slid open and Seki dashed in after Yamura, just about when the city patrol reached them, and Amaya immediately slammed the door shut. "You have entered Amaya's private territory. Custom combat rules apply. PvP status, disabled." Outside, the city patrol's horse ran past the door without slowing down, and its gallop soon faded further and further away, confirming Seki's guess that the patrols really let you off the hook once you entered a private territory. He noticed then that his heart was beating fast, and he could not help admitting that there was some childish joy to be had in running from the law. Perhaps this was why everyone seemed so enthusiastic about brawls. It made sense now why it would be advantageous to have access to multiple territories throughout the city, especially East and West City, which were PvP zones. Amaya's place was a moderate-sized room with a narrow wood hallway that was only as wide as the door.
On the right was a raised tatami platform about 8 mats in size, with colorful floor cushions strewn haphazardly around. Against the far wall was a large, ornate cabinet, on which sat a flower vase. The other wall, opposite the window, was full of painting and calligraphy art. It was not large, but had a rather homey, lived-in feel to it. Seeing the possibility of what could be, Seiki understood now why Yamada was so distraught when he had to move back to the starting territory in Yanagi Alley. "Nice place," he said. Amaya was a youngish-looking girl in a bright red kimono with white and yellow flower patterns, with a wide, cream-colored obi and a beaded hairpin and a matching red in her hair. There was also some otherworldly quality about her that Seiki could not describe. She held out her hand.
5 gold.
Yamada turned toward Seiki.
5 gold,
he said. Seiki chuckled as he reached into his cloth pouch and managed to find the correct amount.
Don't worry,
Yamada whispered.
I swear it's worth it.
Amaya pocketed the gold in disbelief, as if she had not expected them to really pay. Seiki realized that since PvP was disabled in her territory, there was no way she could have forced them to keep their word.
Okay, thanks,
said the girl, obviously happy about the trade.
I'm a gracious host, and you can stay for a while for tea or something until the patrols give up.
They decided that they needed to sit down. Even when there was no real physical fatigue from all the non-stop fighting and running, it had indeed been a long while, and Seiki was feeling exhausted, not to mention very thirsty.
Come on up,
said Amaya, as she leapt back up onto the tatami floor.
Shoes off.
She then scowled at Yamada as he was about to protest.
I know, no dirt, dirt fades, I don't care. Shoes off.
Seiki noticed that on her walls hung scrolls of paintings in the traditional style, one of which he recognized as Kakura Village, with Manji's house in the foreground. Amaya tossed the extra cushions into one corner as she made room in the middle of the floor, before lighting a conveniently smokeless coal stove. A few moments later, they were sitting on her colorful cushions, drinking her tasteless hot tea, which she brewed from some dubious-looking dry leaves she found in her cabinet. Would it have been so bad if the patrols catch you? Seiki could not help wondering, looking at one of Amaya's paintings on the wall that depicted a lively parade scene. He recognized the city patrol's uniform in the painting.
Depends on how much the Shogun likes you,
Amaya said.
Of course it's horrible, said Yamada. You waste half an hour sitting there in prison and you can't cheat. Even if you log out, when you come back, you still have to do your time. And the guards take all your stuff from you,
Amaya added.
So you can't do your crafting or anything while you wait.
She nodded towards the paintings. But you get them back? Seiki asked to make sure.
Oh yeah,
said Amaya.
After they let you out, you just go to the counter and they give you your things. It's a bother that you have to consciously re-equip your weapons, though.
Yamada sipped his tea, grimaced, and quickly put it down. Actually, if your Shogun reps are low, they sometimes lose your stuff on purpose. Amaya blinked.
What? The guards?
Seiki was also surprised. If anything, it sounded exactly like the real world, complete with its own version of corruption.
Yeah, said Yamada. Just to mess with you. One time they took my health potion. The other day they took my carving knife. Can you believe that? Carving knife, of all things. I had to run back to the Yoshi Shrine to get a new one so I can make my arrows.
The girl pointed a finger at him.
The Shogun must hate you. Do you have negative reps or something?
What? Never happened to you?
I'm almost Lady of the Court,
she said proudly.
I don't even know what that is,
Yamada muttered. It was like they were speaking a foreign language, and Seiki was about to ask them to explain when Yamada turned to him, grinning heavily as if he had a secret to tell.
Well, it would be really bad if they pinched this.
Yamada wants to trade. You have received Mysterious Scroll. Open to read. What's this? Seiki studied the scroll Yamada had just given him. It was a piece of yellowish parchment wrapped around a simple green wooden roller and tied with a green string. Yamada could no longer contain his gleeful laughter.
I looted it, he cried. When you were fighting that robber guy, I managed to loot the thing. It dropped 2 scrolls, so 1 for each of us. Actually, it dropped some other craft items too, but I didn't have time, so never mind.
Seiki understood now why Yamada had been so worried about dying or getting caught by the patrols. He had no idea what the scroll was, but it seemed to be a highly desirable reward, judging from how excited the Ryoshi was. Amaya perked up with interest.
What was it? Akamon? Something like that. The red or blue guy,
said Yamada.
Red or blue? Yeah.
Amaya shook her head.
I mean, did you pick red or blue?
Yamada shrugged. Both, kinda. Not sure if that's a glitch.
It was kind of freaky, actually. The right answer is no cape, and it will despawn,
said Amaya, nodding to herself. Yamura made a face.
Why would you despawn a rare? You always take on a rare. Chances are that someone is going to tap it too and help you kill it.
Yeah, and dilute your drop,
said Amaya.
Or worse, kill you and get all the